to the fabulous KPCW Saturday Film Panel, where the post Sundance edition. And in just a few more weeks, we'll be doing, I think, the post-Oscar edition. Yeah, the Oscars are coming up quickly. But but for now, we've got all the opinions that are fit to spout on Sundance and our fabulous panel in alphabetical order, I think. Yeah, we'll start with Barbara Bretz. How you doing?
Good. Thanks, Rick.
Okay. We have her microphone is on. A good start.
Yay!
Good
they start. Didn't censor me this
yes.
time.
Yes. Barbara, a member of our film review crew, and I believe you were a co-host with Leslie.
During two days. The Sundance Reel. Yes. It was really fun.
Yeah. And Jill Orschel, who is not only a film observer, but... a filmmaker, and you said this was your favorite festival except for the one you were in.
It really was. They did a great job this year with the festival. It was so fun. I'm excited to talk about it today.
Uh-huh. And Katie Wayne, the ubiquitous director of Park City Film.
Good
morning.
Good to be here. Yeah. We made it through another festival.
Yes.
Check that off the list. Success.
Yes. Yes. I decided that we could kind of start off with the person who probably had the best score in terms of number of films seen, and Barbara tells me that she's probably the winner there, because she got to look at a lot of screeners before the festival. And you saw how many screeners?
I saw 16 screeners, and it was really great. And the reason being, you know, we have a lot of these filmmakers on during the Sundance Reel, and so... We can ask so many more intelligent questions if we've had a chance to see the project. In fact, it was really funny working ahead. I did some questions for Leslie on movies I hadn't seen. And then when I got to see him, I went back and looked at my questions and just could do such a better job with the interview. So it really helps.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's start with you then and kind of give us a little bit of a view of... the highlights and the lowlights for you. And if Barbara mentions a picture that the rest of the folks here have seen, you know, you can just give us raise a little hand or, you know, a little thumbs up or thumbs down or something. But what are the highlights for you?
Well, the highlights, which were kind of the expected highlights, were movies like Late Night that had such a strong cast with Emma Thompson, written by Mindy Kaling and also co-starring Mindy Kaling. Brittany Runs a Marathon, which we heard was going to be lots of fun, and it really was. But when you see the movie, it's even more complicated and interesting than just fun. So those two were high on my list, as was The Report and Official Secrets, both of those having to do with the American government and the British and American government in tandem, and some cover-ups and some interesting intrigue. And so those were real high as far as my favorite kind of polished professional movies that we expected to be good, and they were good.
In terms of any that were... And any that look crappy and unpolished, but you like them, anyway?
Well, you know, what I decided is documentaries often fall into that category for me, because there are documentaries that the story or the story they're trying to get out or the meaning behind the doc is so powerful that it's hard not to give it a good rating. But then you see some other documentaries, and I'm thinking Words from a Bear, which I just happened to pop into because I had time. And it was the most beautifully constructed documentary, with a mix of animation and dramatization and interviews and Western landscape. And it had a powerful story, too. But I realize documentaries are just really hard for me to give a low rating, because they're either visually great or message is powerful. And it's sometimes hard to distinguish between the two. But when you get both, it's really wonderful. Hmm. And Pothrocene was that way, too, the human epic, which is a trilogy. I don't know that it's a trilogy, but it's the third project that these three filmmakers have done. And Pothrocene refers to the human epic and the impact that humans have had on the Earth with our construction, with our digging with our tunnel building, with our what they call techno-fossils, the things we leave behind that don't dissolve. And that was a beautifully shot and really powerful message as well.
And so among the documentaries, and any others that pop up in particular?
Well, my favorite of the whole festival was a documentary that was in the spotlight category. And that's another screener that I got beforehand. And I couldn't quit talking about it. I really was creating buzz in every line that I got in. And that was Maiden. And that was the story about the women's yachting team. It was young British woman set in 1989. And she decided she wanted to be the first female skipper of an all-female crew of this round-the-world yachting event. And they spent 3 years trying to find sponsorship. Of course, nobody wanted to sponsor a doomed cruise. And so once they finally pulled things together, it chronicles their participation in this race. And truly, I teared up at least 4 or 5 times, not out of sadness, but you just get so engaged with these women and what they're trying to accomplish. And so really, that was my favorite film of the whole festival. And it's called Maiden.
Okay. The let's see. Jill and Katie, what would you say your tally is of all told of films?
They're
counting.
I counted 11 social events.
Oh my goodness!
5 panels.
Those count. Those count big time.
I am including breakfasts with Sundance friends, and dinners and such. But I saw 21 films.
Hmm. And Katie?
2,000 boxes of popcorn sold.
We all have stats for different reasons.
Stats. Yeah. Probably 10 to 15 hair on fire screenings where 500 people want to get popcorn in 15 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And 11 films.
Okay. And did at the venue where you were working most, were there any good Q&A fights?
Q&A fights? Well, we're not allowed into the venue.
Oh.
So we are outside. We are the supporters. If you can't be an athlete, be an athletic supporter. So we're out there feeding the masses, helping everyone be happy and enjoy. I mean, what's a movie without popcorn?
Sure.
And Raisinets. 1 year we ran out of Raisinets to the great horror of the film producer, who was a big name. It's like, I can't see my, it was crying. It's like, I can't see my movie without Raisinette. So that's never happened again.
Don't make that comment to the Eccles.
I'm sure they said, Mr. Weinstein, we're out of Raisinettes.
Yes, I'm so sorry. No, it was actually a much nicer producer. No, we're not allowed into the venue because we don't manage the venue. It's owned by the city. So we stay on the outside. We observe from the sidelines. But we have a great crew over there. I want to just give a shout out to the 100-plus volunteers putting in over 1,000 hours that really make this a big fundraiser for Park City Films.
Yay, volunteers!
Yes.
Our town runs on them, and these people are amazing. I mean, they're just willing to jump in and get things done in the name of independent cinema, which is great. I mean, the people in the background, I think, and, you know, the Sundance volunteers, obviously, as well, that they put in long hours to make sure that this festival works well and we can have this great experience.
Yes. Well, the stat on popcorn, that is worth
most we've ever sold.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. Yep, we ran out of popcorn bowls.
Oh,
in fact.
All right.
Boxes had to go to bowls.
Okay.
Well, yes, just hands. We had Oliver Twist there. Lisa.
For the VIP section, our volunteers will cup the popcorn.
Yes, we will hold it for you, a carefully curated popcorn. Yes. You can have 6 kernels.
Yes.
Gourmet popcorn. But some great films. I mean, as always, I love the docs. That's my personal favorite.
A couple of particulars this year for you?
So one that was a surprise, and on the last day all of the award winners come into the library venue, so I get to see a bunch of those because I can just easily waitlist them and still kind of manage our ops at the same time. But Honey Hunter for Macedonia, which was beautiful, and it was kind of hard to tell as you're watching it because I hadn't read any. What I love about Sundance is, for me, I don't read anything about the films.
Honeyland.
I don't read much about the films.
That got a lot of awards,
just, you don't,
too, didn't
it, Katie? So I don't have a lot of preconceived notions. I mean, you read a little synopsis, but I don't really do a lot of research because the rest of my life is about reading critical reviews, and it kind of, you know, in a way, it taints your perspective on it. So to come in fresh and just kind of go with it. So I didn't really know much about it, and I didn't know that it was a documentary, although there are certain scenes that you want to, you're like, well, that clearly is a documentary because you would not let a child fall on a stump and be bitten by bees. probably in a real, in a narrative
in a
sequence.
Dramatic.
Yes.
There was Honey Boy in there.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, there's Honey Boy. True. Yes. But it was just beautiful. And it was just one of those documentaries that is, you know, the pacing is, it kind of unfolds in a very relaxed fashion, but it's never boring. And it's about this woman who just is the last or one of the few remaining people that collects honey from bees, but wild bees. And just her relationship to nature, and then this young family moves in next door to her, and they're trying to exploit. I mean, it's kind of this, you know, old school, new school, man versus nature type storyline where the family comes in and they're trying to make money as fast as they can, and they end up collapsing the bee colony as a result. And, you know, then they kind of come and go as things do, and, you know, life goes on, and you kind of at the end get this sense that things will just keep going, you know, that it's not a tragic end. But it kind of leads you into, you know, it's just a nice parallel to the modern world and kind of our clash. If you think about Anthropocene, you know, the clash of modern technology with, you know, kind of age-old, you know, techniques that we've used to be in harmony with nature. And sometimes there's that conflict. And how do you get back into balance? But it was just something completely unexpected and one that I just thought was beautiful and just traveling to a different part of the world that I really don't know much about.
Yeah. And so some people might not expect a documentary about beekeeping or honey harvesting would be exciting.
And it's compelling. I mean, it's kind of oddly fascinating. And just the relationship of the main character with her mother and with the neighbors. And it's just, you can relate to pieces of it, even though it's clearly something, for me anyway, completely foreign to my own personal life and, you know, the way we live here in Park City. But it's just, and the scenery, of course, is beautiful, but just a, you know, an outstanding film, I thought.
Well, on the opposite end from nature, I saw the documentary Apollo 11. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a space nerd or a technology geek or anything, which is really what that doc was all about, the mission, the construction, the process. And it held my attention the whole time. It was just so amazing. Kim Yatani had said at the preview that NASA had cameras in places you just wouldn't imagine. And so all of that film was vintage, you know, actual film. It is amazing.
And it's crazy when you think about how claustrophobic, I mean, these tiny little spaces, it really seems improbable that they could actually go into space. You know, everything's shaking.
And then you see that thing land on the moon, and really it looks like something my husband and his brother welded together and totally wrapped with aluminum foil. It's amazing.
Well, it also speaks, I think, to the character of the astronauts, that they're willing to put themselves into this thing that really does not look like it's going to survive the journey.
Well, and not only that, but they didn't develop at all the character of the astronauts. I mean, they summed up their lives in like 5 black and white photos, and the only real glimpse of the astronauts you get is a few statements back and forth to control, and yet, you know, there's humor, and it was really interesting to me.
Yeah. So, Jill, some of what did you see?
Oh, you know, I loved Apollo 11, too. I thought the genius of the movie was the depiction of the humanness of the astronauts, and all these shots of them getting ready, people helping them. It shows kind of their vulnerability, their families. That's the footage that we, you know, it wasn't shown on the news in, was it 1969? Yeah. So that was just fascinating to see that. It really showed the humanity of it and the smallness of it and the bigness of it.
Mm-hmm.
Honeyland was absolutely by far my favorite. It was my first ticket that I saw, and you know, I mean, that is a documentary of excellence. You know, stunning cinematography, the character-driven journey. You know, it's really told like a, you know, like a novel or a fiction film. You know, with the structure of following that woman. So I just thought it earned every 3 awards that it got.
When you watch those films, Jill, do you look at them through the eyes of a filmmaker and think, oh, I'm going to try that, or, oh, I would have done that differently? Or
Every time I sit down, I'm like, okay, how can I get inspired, and how am I going to make my film better and copy something? you know, the other films that I just loved, with One Woman Nation, or One Child Nation, Nanfu Wang, I just thought that that was just like, you know, I sat with this young girl from China who was part of the the one child rule, very strict rule. And she was just wept the whole time and was so moved by it. And I just thought, wow, Sundance is really, that is the thing that they've been cultivating, getting the person that makes the movie about the subject where they lived and people seeing it. It was just a really incredible experience.
Okay, we're going to come back with our panel in just a few minutes. We'll get to the exciting part, which is we're going to encourage them to talk about their lowlights. and I know it's tough to get Jill to do that, but we're going to try.
That only grows in the early spring. Love is nature.
Hi, this is Scott Wolf. I'll be hosting the National Ability Center's Red, White, and Snow March 7th through the 9th. This wine and ski festival features the Uncorked Wine Tasting, Vintner Dinners, Opportunity Drawing for a Trip to Africa, and more. And it all supports the National Ability Center, a nonprofit organization and proud KPCW supporter. Events sell out fast, so don't wait. Tickets at redwhiteandsnow.org.
Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by DeJoria Center at High Star Ranch and Esco Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. That's Esco, ESCO.
And we're back. I wanted to just to explain Andy Williams singing "Love Is a Many Splendid Thing." Well, you know, Valentine's is less than a week away, and so we're trying to do a little movie-oriented romantic themes here.
And we love you, Rick.
Oh, gosh.
Can I Rick, start the
Rick
negatives?
And the Flick Chicks?
I wasn't That's hinting, right. But yeah, but
we're big fans.
Yes, in terms of you were mentioning a few before we got on air, but what some of your lowlights?
While this was one of my best festivals ever, I did have some disappointments. One was I didn't get into Ask Dr. Ruth. I was really bummed about that. I did see her speak at the Women's Sundance Brunch, and she's incredible. We can see Ask Dr. Ruth on what, Netflix maybe? Or
I think HBO.
Park City Film.
It will be out there, I know.
Yeah. Well, if it's Netflix, not with me.
Oh, okay.
That'll be on your own TV screen, sorry.
Also, I couldn't get into any of the VRs. I tried 4 or 5 times.
Ditto.
I tried the e-wait list, and I even went to the venue, and I get turned away. I really was disappointed about that. As far as a film that really killed me, I was so looking forward to seeing the documentary by Nick Broomfield about Leonard Cohen, because I love him. And, oh, I even had my husband speed down 224, 70 miles an hour. We almost...
No.
And we invited some friends, bought tickets for them. And what a... Nick Broomfield... It tells us early on that he was a lover of the muse in the film. It's called Marianne and Leonard.
And Marianne's the muse.
Marianne is the muse. So it's not called Leonard and Marianne. It's Marianne first, and it's all about her. And it seemed to me that he filmed it like a jealous ex-lover and really didn't portray Leonard Cohen in the best light. I was just so disappointed. And it kind of objectified her, too. There's all these beauty shots, like, and hit us over the head with muse, muse, muse. So I was a little bummed about that because he really is a master documentary filmmaker who has come to Sundance often. And
So, Barbara, any low lights disappointments?
Yeah, a disappointment. I had rushed over, as we sometimes schedule our movies a little too close together, but Eccles to Mark, not a bad hop, even if you have to run it. And I got over there after the tent had cleared of ticket holders, pass holders, and e-wait lists. So I was the only one in the tent hoping they would still let me in. And she held me up because they were still doing the intro. And so before I could enter the tent, Jeff Goldblum, in his white outfit came out, and they were shooting publicity stills. And so I had to get escorted through the middle of Jeff Goldblum's publicity still. And he said, enjoy the movie. And I said, thanks, Jeff, I will. But I didn't. It was awful. It was called The Mountain. And, you know, people must have liked it because, you know, it takes all kinds. And a lot of folks didn't get up and leave. But the third question from the row behind me was some girl saying, so what was the point of this movie? So I think I'm not alone in not really loving it. It was set in the 50s, 60s. It had to do with lobotomies and just strange people and weird things. And it just, there were a lot of really beautiful vintage cars. If you're a car person, you might have enjoyed the vehicles, but not the movie itself.
Hmm. Well, maybe that'll go down in Sundance history as one of those famous famous bad Q&As. It seems like there was a foul smell in the room.
Yes, yeah, so there's some great Saturday Live skits on the Q&As, which are pretty funny.
Oh, I had a success story on a Q&A. Could I mention that?
Yeah, sure.
You know, the film, which I was really looking forward to seeing, and it paid off, Moonlight Sonata, Deafness in Three Movements. It was in the U.S. Doc competition by the director Irene Taylor Brodsky, who is here with Here and Now and won an audience award in 2007. Anyways, her whole family was here. Her film featured her two deaf parents as well as her deaf son. And Sundance really stepped it up. They had people, sign language, people, the family was just really taken care of. And Caroline Labresco, one of the senior programmers at Sundance, was there. You know, you could just see this huge effort by Sundance.
And they had 30 ASL interpreters, they said, this year. Last year they had three this year.
At the opening press conference, at the New York Times event, several different events I went to all had interpreters.
Yeah, and I think the big thing that's hard for festival, I mean, certainly we upgraded the Santee last year for the festival so we could have closed captioning and audio description, is so many of these films are too new. It's really expensive to get that technology embedded into your film. So even though the technology is available in a lot of the theaters, they can't transmit it. So the fact that they took that extra step and said, well, we can't provide closed captions unless it's embedded, which in the case of Moonlight Sonata it was, but we'll have ASL interpreters so that you can participate in the Q&A and in the panels. And I thought that was really a great statement and just, you know, really trying to make it more accessible. I mean, that's really the idea.
And related to the idea of full service, but before they began the Michael Jackson documentary, Leaving Neverland, and the programmer, Cooper, warned that the first half of the picture especially gets into some fairly graphic descriptions of the molestation. So, and he said if anybody was triggered by that or you know, it bothered them, that they actually had mental health professionals standing by.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Which is great.
Well, you know, at Film Church on Sunday, they did talk about some of the pre-festival issues they had. And of course, that was one of them. They received more protests on the fact that they were going to show that film from people in the Michael Jackson community who felt like it was unfair treatment or not true. I mean, it got down to threatening phone messages left on their message machine about boycotting all the sponsors and so on. They really received some heavy-duty threats on that film more than any others this year.
Yeah, you could see there was definitely a heightened security presence.
Yes.
You could feel that in all the theaters.
And I think I guess it's better to over-prepare than under, but I think they only had about three people outside the theater. We're handing out some flyers defending Michael Jackson, and I've got a copy someplace, but it's like this picture of, it's like one of those Sunday school flyers that of children romping through a field with Jesus. only instead of Jesus, it's Michael Jackson. You know?
Did anybody see the film?
Yeah, well I was there for the binge, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what'd you think?
And, well, I don't think it revealed anything that we didn't already know before, but it was in detail, and about how Michael, you know, how a molester or a pedophile, you know, works on young kids, and the second part of the film, the real examination of how this affected them, you know, in their lives growing up as they became adults, and dealing with their guilt and the guilt of the parents who did not do enough to just, you know, a celebrity wanted to take their kid away alone with them for a weekend or something, and in retrospect they said, I should have thought more about this.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like. That it's more about the parent. It always goes to the parent, you know, of what's happening.
Right. Well, but it also talks to just the insidiousness of a pedophile, mm-hmm. the grooming, the cultivation. Yeah. You gain the trust not only just of the kid, but of the parents. Mm-hmm. So you feel as a parent that it's okay to trust, and that, of course, happens to the child. I mean, it's just right. What I haven't seen the movie, but yeah. just, you know, from what I've read and heard, just that's important for everyone to be aware of, yeah. that there is this whole process. It's not so black and white. Of right. like, oh, look, axe murder, taking my child. Great, yeah. bye. Yeah. You know, it's well, you know, it's clearly yeah. more nuanced. And yeah.
But the whole idea,
you know, horrifying, you know, for all of them.
The pedophile, you know, they get candy and they have gifts and they're nice. And I mean, just the normal standard case, that's difficult to resist. But when you have
Michael Jackson,
who yeah. can offer more candy and gifts than anybody in the world.
Mm-hmm. And the allure of celebrity,
mm-hmm. yes.
which, you know, we're all exposed to during the Sundance Film Festival.
Yeah. yeah. And Jill, I think you went to the panels. Were you allured by any celebrities?
Oh, hey, well, I sat by Vince
Was
Vaughn
yeah.
at the Amazing Jonathan documentary at the Mark, and his beautiful girlfriend was cuddling up to him the whole time. That was kind of funny. When I had breakfast with some friends, the festival director, John Cooper, came and sat down with us. That was kind of fun.
That's fun.
And my favorite Sundance, or my most disappointed celebrity experience, though,
let's wait till we get there. We're gonna play a new panel game here. But before we get to that, I haven't had a chance to ask Katie, you know, your low lights, disappointments, and we're not just talking about who didn't buy enough popcorn.
Right. I want to give a shout out to the Wu-Tang Clan because they brought a ton of popcorn. They were awesome. I ran into the cinematographer at an event earlier, and I was like, hey, it's a fundraiser. He's like, we will buy a bunch of food. I was like, yes.
Good,
so they
for
did.
Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang, the entire clan came out. So I was a little disappointed. Sonja Henie, the White Swan movie. When I was a child, my grandmother used to call me Sonja Henie because I had to braces on my legs because my feet were turned in. And so I was just kind of always been fascinated by her, knew her as an ice skater, but didn't really know much about her. And so I went in with kind of these expectations and this great nostalgia for it. And it just was very, I thought the movie was interesting, an interesting depiction of her life, and certainly the conflict that she faced as a strong, sexually liberated woman mm-hmm. at the time. Probably things she would still face now as a, you know, independent, sexually liberated woman. But at the end, it was just really unsatisfying. You know, you have these movies where it's this great story arc, and you kind of get this great character development, and then it's like, the end, click, done. Aww. And you just don't believe it. You're like, how, you know, this is what actually happened in her life, because it's a real true story, and you see pictures of her with her husband. But to get from where she was at kind of the depths of her despair and, you know, her lowest point in her life and her career, to suddenly like, and tomorrow she marries her childhood sweetheart. And it's just not believable in how they built the story. And maybe that's how it's happened, but it just felt very dissatisfying at the end. You're like, oh. Mm. So it's kind of a, you know, a disappointing note to end on. And the other one, and I know this is probably not very popular, but The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. I went in, again, great expectations. It won the Alfred P. Sloan Award. Yeah. And I, you know, I knew the story, and so it was really interesting. And I just felt it didn't come together as just the way that it was depicted. The story was interesting.
But it's based on a true story,
based on a true story, absolutely. And it's just how you were talking about, Barb, mm-hmm. with Docs, where there's kind of that split. You know, there's a good story, and then there's a good presentation. And I didn't feel like the presentation matched up to the power of the mm-hmm. actual
yeah.
story.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was a little bit kind of like, oh, I mean, yeah. interesting, but yeah. I don't know. You yeah. know, you kind of like, I'm not sure how they could have done it better, but there are bits and pieces as you're watching, your brain kind of is like, maybe that would have been a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or different. If you'd done it differently, it would have been more compelling.
Mm. I want to yeah. throw out, too, Jill yeah. mentioned the untitled Amazing Jonathan doc. And I have to tell you, when I went to the preview a couple weeks before Sundance, Kim Yatani called that the most bizarre film on the lineup. Mm. And whenever you hear that about Sundance, that doesn't make me want to go.
Right.
And so because we were going to interview them on the reel, I did some research, found out who Amazing Jonathan was, and I thought, well, you know, it sounds a little more intriguing. And then they came here and we interviewed him, and it sounded really intriguing. Mm-hmm. And I could catch, the wait list was still open for their premiere. So I went over and caught it. And I enjoyed that documentary so much. I would have never called it bizarre.
You know, I think there was a lot of cringeworthy moments, and the subject is still alive, and...
And he's a little cringeworthy himself.
And he was there. So, you know, but that's bizarre in that respect, I think.
But it was intriguing, and it kept taking those fun little strange turns, but... Bizarre turned me off. Intriguing would have got me there.
Yeah, you know? I agree.
Okay, well, speaking of bizarre and cringeworthy, and that'll lead us into our special new game we're going to introduce after the break, our new Sundance game here for the film panel. We'll be right back.
This Lost and Found report is brought to you in part by Park City Title Company, providing escrow services in Summit and Wasatch Counties, 649-8322.
Support public radio by being part of the KPCW Pledge Drive. If you or your business would like to contribute items to our fundraiser, go to our website, kpcw.org, and click the Pledge Drive button. Ideal donations include restaurant or store gift certificates, vacation packages or rentals, or anything you think showcases the unique contribution your business makes to this community. We'll highlight your donation on the air and double the gratitude by giving it to a donor. KPCW's Pledge Drive puts the fun in fundraising. Join us.
Welcome back to the fabulous KPCW film panel. We're going to Sundance means never having to say you're sorry. or maybe it does. But I asked our panelists to kind of start play a new game for us, and I call it Big Fan. Big Fan. That was the name of a Sundance film in about 2008, starred the comedian Patton Oswalt. And a memorable story about he was this sports fanatic, one of those guys who's just, a real zealot for his team. And the guy runs into the quarterback, his sports idol. And there's a misunderstanding, and Patton Oswalt's idol ends up beating him up. And I wanted to ask our panel, and this not just for this Sundance, but just cast your mind back to all Sundances, any celebrity encounters. We wanted to ask them about their big fan experiences, and on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the ones that make you cringe, that the celebrity was a jerk, or you just babbled and said stupid things and it was just horrible, and 10 would be that they were wonderful and you were witty and charming and it was just
a legend
great.
In our own mind.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
From our perspective, of course.
let's try Katie, the head of Park City Film, since you're the one who's selling popcorn to the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yes, exactly. That's my claim to fame now.
So just going back over your life, do you have any
good... It kind of falls in the middle, I would say. So do you remember when Sony dropped the interview because they were getting death threats and, you know, the Korean government was going to, you know, bomb them to annihilation,
right.
You know, all these different things.
Yeah,
and so they said, we can't show it. So we at the art houses came together and we ended up showing it, and we showed it like 20 times. So I had to be there every time because it was a security issue, right? We had the police come through and all this stuff. And so I know that film quite well. So it's during Sundance that year, you know, I'm walking through the hallway as one does, you know, going from one spot to the other, kind of stacking stuff. And I hear someone talking on the phone. And so I, you know, hear this voice, And I immediately turn around thinking, oh, this is someone I know. And I'm, you know, about to say hi to them mid like, hey, what, you know, good to see you. It's James Franco, of course, on the phone, because I now know his voice intimately because I've seen him 20 times in the interview. And it was just this hilarious moment of him kind of recognizing that I'm trying to say hi to him and he's on the phone and kind of like, who are you? And I'm like, oh, horrified. Like, I don't actually know you the way I think I know you. I'm, yeah. So that was kind of my, I'm incredibly embarrassed, but very funny moment at the same time. Because I, of course, wanted to be like, I showed your movie. And he'd probably be like, thumbs up. Sounds great. I'm on the phone with my producer. Like, I don't, who are you? Oh, so, okay.
So
yeah.
Is that a three kind of or funny. A four?
I don't know. Like, it was just hilarious. It was kind of that Sundance moment of like, only at Sundance. And then the other time was Matt Ross, when he came here with Captain Fantastic, was buying popcorn and looking for all these things. And, you know, people are buying their stuff and they're kind of in the mode. And it's really interesting to see when you recognize them, it kind of snaps them out of that moment. And you're like, hey, I really liked your film. And you start talking to them about it. And they kind of have this moment of like, oh my gosh, yes, of course, you love film too.
Yeah.
You are not just people serving me popcorn. You are people who love cinema. And so we had this great conversation about Captain Fantastic. And he was lovely. So I think it would be kind of a 10. Just super nice guy and just, you know, helping him out. But it was just really funny. It's always interesting to see people kind of, you know, kind of come out of themselves and just be like, oh, because they don't often, you kind of realize that they probably don't often get a chance to talk to their fans, to the people that actually see the films, not critics, not people in the industry, but just normal, everyday people who really responded well to their film. And of course, Captain Fantastic was an amazing film. So it was really fun to then kind of have that moment and see how well it did, to be like, yeah, got to say hi to him and, you know, let him know that even us little people appreciated where he was from the beginning. So we knew where it was going to go.
Okay, so Jill?
Oh, well, way back in 2009, I had a little short film that played called Sister Wife, and it was screening at the Sundance Resort screening room. And prior to this, I had been at Sundance photographing festivals and labs, and Robert Redford has always been somebody who I'm a little bit smitten with. Hmm. And he's like one of those celebrities that I, you know, get a little. So anyways, while I'm screening my film, my whole family came and my dad was there. And my dad is he's 1 month away from age as Robert Redford. And 82 now. anyways, Bob was at the screening and I was there with my dad. And thinking that I photographed him and stuff, I would go introduce the two of them. But I just fell flat and didn't say a word. And to this day, I regret it. Oh, I regret that one. So I'm going to have to give myself a zero.
that bad, huh? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, big regret.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, Barbara, how about you?
You know, I'm going to stay mid-range, too, because I'm not brave enough to babble when I see somebody famous. I'm more likely just to smile and wave. And one year at the Eccles, Aidan Quinn was about 2 or 3 rows away, and he was looking back, you know, looking for someone, and we made eye contact, and you just did that wave, and he automatically did that wave, but then you could see the face go, don't know you, and the hand just kind of melted. But my almost 5 minutes of fame came last year during film church, because we all know how cute and engaging John Cooper is, and you do feel like you know him from all of these years.
Yeah.
I was in the front row of film church, and they started asking trivia questions. And he asked this question, and he looked in my direction. He goes, Barbara, you should know this. And I thought, he knows me. Yeah. And then I realized the older lady sitting next to me was shrugging. And I said, is your name Barbara? And she goes, yes, I've worked for Sundance forever. So for 5 seconds, I thought John Cooper knew who I was.
That's a good one.
That's classic.
I love it. How about you, Rick?
Well, I have to go way back on a couple of my a moderate one and a 2 or a 3, which is way back in the when they had the U.S. Utah Film Festival in Salt Lake and in 79, and the theme, the emphasis was they were showing old films on the theme of sci-fi, fantasy, suspense, etc. And As I was waiting for a film to start, you know, a guy comes up and says, "Oh, that looks like a good crowd." And I recognize that it is not a movie star, but it's Harlan Ellison, who is an awesome, volatile sci-fi writer. Wrote, you know, great episodes of wrote City on the Edge of Forever for Star Trek and Outer Limits, and was trying to come back with something charming and witty, and it was just I had that.
It's amazing how that happened.
Terror, yeah. And he just kind of smirked and walked away. And the only comfort I have is that he doesn't remember it now because he's dead. but the moderate one, was actually at the same festival because they had a showing. They had Frank Capra and Jimmy Stewart appearing at that festival, and so I took off from work that day, and the only thing I could think of was running to the bookstore and getting a copy of Tom Sawyer. For fans of It's a Wonderful Life, you know that you know you need to have your Tom Sawyer, and
yes.
And went down the line and asked them to sign it, and all I recall is that showing the book to Jimmy Stewart and talking like Yoda. It was like, "But sign you now," and he seemed a little listless and standoffish, which I disappointed. I heard later that the thing is that he was hard of hearing.
Oh.
And so that he probably didn't know how to react to he couldn't hear this person mumbling to him like Yoda.
He probably didn't even know who Yoda was. Like, what is
yeah.
this?
Yeah, Yoda? Yeah. But Ned Stanley Capra, you know, saw the book. He smiled. He understood the bit I was trying to do.
Yeah,
nice. I guess so I have the copy of Tom Sawyer with their both of their signatures.
Well, to have translation from the giver to the taker, I think you should get maybe 9 points.
And Capra, a rare edition of that Tom Sawyer book. That's probably
Capra
worth something
boosted,
now.
Boosted. If it had been a vintage first edition of Tom Sawyer.
Was it at least a hardcover?
Yeah, it was a hardcover. So I'd give that a 6. But definitely better than the Harlan Ellison. And I know that there was when we did the Sundance show up in the Marsat building, and there was a woman who came after us and did a show on horse care or something. And she's this, you know, tall drink of water, and she's leaning against our reception desk with her rump kind of stuck out, in the hallway. She hears a voice behind her saying, "Oh, excuse me," and you know, and she turns around, and it's Anthony Hopkins.
Oh.
So she had a pretty good one too. And that might be about a respectable 3. If we are close to, we could do a break, and we'll get back with wrap up a few topics, a few Sundance observations. We'll try to your take on Oscar nominations, folks.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Doug Wells.
And I'm Renee Bodley. Join us Monday morning for Mountain Money.
We'll talk about making money, spending money, and investing it wisely.
Plus, how today's business trends affect you, our listeners in Summit and Wasatch County.
Join us at 9 a.m. Monday, right after NPR News.
Sponsored in part by Mountain West Bank, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Park City Chamber Bureau, Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, and Columbus Pacific Development, with Viridian and Apex Residences.
I'm Mike Kirby with Big D Construction, celebrating another great year with KPCW. Jack Livinggood had the vision 17 years ago to create a true mountain resort division, hiring people that live, understand, and build in the community. With offices in Jackson, Bozeman, and our home office in Park City, that vision is alive today. More information at big-d.com.
When two guys pull together, it's teamwork.
in foul or sunny weather. Back with the panel. And continuing our romance theme, I shifted to bromance for a second there, hoping for us, doing teamwork. Hey, gotta love it.
Okay, now
Barbara told her story quickly.
Well, I had a positive kind of celebrity experience this year, surprising.
Nine.
And so I sat next to this couple at the Eccles Center, and this guy's very distinctive, long gray hair. I've seen him in lines forever at Sundance. So I assumed he was local. And I said, "You guys are local, right?" And he says, "No, we're from Memphis." And then I said, "Well, are you just big film fans? I see you every year. Are you in the business?" And his wife said, "Well, my husband's in the music business." And I said, "Wow, being in Memphis and being in music, do you have any good Elvis stories?" And he said, "Well, I wrote Suspicious Minds." And I said, "Well, that's a pretty good connection."
Oh, humble.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't do much. I think I played the guitar on Jailhouse Rock. just a little thing. Knew this guy named Buddy Holly. Maybe you've heard of him. Yeah.
Small guy.
Yeah. Any final observations on Sundance? Movies, operation, whatever.
Actually, the operation, I thought something was really interesting with the e-wait list. That seems to be really the way to go. And people are even thinking of doing e-wait list instead of purchasing passes and tickets. Sundance, I read something that they're
Sundance is thinking of doing that?
Well, no.
I'm a little horrified.
No, people are, you know, that might be a trend of the way to go.
But, you know, what I'm wondering about that, Jill, is I haven't heard numbers yet, but I'm wondering if they sold a lot more passes, you know, full access passes this year, because I noticed overflow, you know, how the passes get to line up in Eccles lobby, and this year they were full in the lobby, lining up around the outside. And I think because of that, they might have released less tickets ahead of time, which is beneficial to the wait list lines.
I
mean?
Right, yes. Now, something was really interesting, though, at the Best of Fest on Monday night. Both screenings, the award winners, the house was...
Not full,
even slightly. And I think it's just people... nobody had tickets. It was all contingent on the e-wait list. I think people need to be aware of how that thing really works.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think there's something to be said for having a hard ticket, too. I mean, I totally agree with the e-wait list. It's amazing. It's way easier than having to line up, you know, as we used to do, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago in the cold and come back. And that was kind of just, you'd have to have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. You're schlepping
around a lot. But a lot of people who attended Best of Fest tend to be people who don't always go to the other movies. They're not familiar with the wait list process.
Right.
They don't have the app downloaded.
I mean, some people I know who attend the fest regularly and, you know, e-wait list everything, they had no idea it was e-wait list. And so I said something, I was like, you've got to get on the e-wait list. And I think if you didn't, then you thought, oh, well, I don't want to try because it's usually, particularly something like Knock Down the House, you think that would be packed, but it's not. So.
And then there was the old problem with the traffic. Oh, was it bad that first week? And, you know, shuttles were plenty. Lyft was present. You see those little pink lights everywhere. They're still here.
But I'm not sure if that helped or hurt it.
I wonder.
I think it was more cars on the road.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on the positive note, the programming I thought was fantastic.
Excellent.
And what's interesting
too,
for me as an exhibitor, obviously as someone that comes to the festival but then curates his films for post-fest, is that what it does and the tone that they've set at this festival and really having a conscious focus on looking at diverse voices. Mm-hmm. World cinema was a much larger presence than it has been in the past. It's something I'm passionate about, so I always look for it anyway, but to have more offerings. And then, of course, that sets the trend as we think about the Oscars, right? It's kind of a weird time. We're looking backwards for the Oscars and looking forward with Sundance. Mm-hmm. But that then dictates what is available to exhibitors down the road, right? Yeah. These are the films that are now getting a little push from Sundance that then will get a farther push
from
distributors.
And even a couple of films in the U.S. Dramatic were films that were subtitled because they had to do with perhaps Chinese-American immigrants or Pakistani-American immigrants. And so there were some subtitles even in the U.S. dramatic film.
And some things like Honeyland where they didn't subtitle parts of the film because it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like you could understand what was happening just by the action. I thought that was an interesting choice as well, that it's there's a universality to these stories that, you know, some people are afraid of subtitles, like, oh, I'm not going to catch everything. And you're like, sometimes you don't need them.
Yeah,
you know,
the visual storytelling.
The visual storytelling is there. There's a literacy component to it, but it's really not that hard. Don't be afraid.
Well, sometimes also there's stars that show up in several films during the festival, and one of those I noticed this year was Jim Gaffigan,
uh-huh, yes.
a comedian who yeah. actually ended up being in three different films this year.
Yeah, there's some kind of accidental king and queen of Sundance.
You know, mm-hmm. right?
some year at Patricia Clarkson
yes,
has three
everything.
Films, or mm-hmm. or Parker Posey is in three or something.
I haven't seen right. her in a while. She used to yeah. be the darling of mm-hmm. the indies. But
yeah. Well, now it's Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think maybe Dr. Ruth might get the...
She had audiences yelling orgasm even the next day from the...
Her work is done.
Yes. Yeah.
And somebody who was very anticipated to be there, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who was and knocked down the house... she couldn't come because the
government started shut down. Again.
Right,
shot.
But she was Skyping all over the place in Q&As at the woman at Sundance brunch and other events. And I think, you know, via Skype, our technology, as she was a mm-hmm. sweetheart to this year as well.
Now someone else who is really expected to be here by some of us Springsteen fans Bruce Springsteen
yes.
because there was a film entitled Blinded by the Light, which mm-hmm. focused on his lyrics. There was a music event the night before entitled Blinded by the Light. And so some of us cleared our entire schedule for the day to be up in front of the line. Not that I really, really, really thought he would come, but if he had come and I hadn't been there, I would have that would have been my like mega disappointment Sundance
you
ever.
There, even if there was a chance, you can't let that pass.
No, but it was a good event. Even though he wasn't there, they did Springsteen songs. They had some wonderful, unique takes on the songs. And his reason for not being here was a good one, in that he didn't want to upstage the film, and he definitely would have had he been here. So.
Yeah, but there's always the chance you'd hear that there'd be some on the grapevine that he was doing an 8:30 show down at a bar on Main Street.
Oh yeah, people had seen him on a
exactly.
Lyft ride. Yeah, no, he was spotted here, whether he was here or not.
Speaking of music, we should give a shout out to Rich Wyman and Lisa Needham of Park 88, who was selected for the ASCAP Music Cafe, and we're proud of our local talent.
Yay.
Yeah, and I think we probably ran out of time to discuss the Oscars very much, but I'll go down the panel and just real quick impressions of Oscars most thing you're most excited about, thing nomination you hate, what? Jill.
Oh, I would love to see The Favorite just clean up. When it played at Park City Film a few weeks ago, I was just blown away. I would just love to see that do well. Just excellence. Also, Roma, I'd love to see, I just thought that was a great film. And Best Actress, Lead Actress, Yalitza, I don't know how to pronounce her name. Anybody know how to say her name? Yalitza.
This is KPCW Park City. We're just giving our station ID.
Yeah, I'd like to see Spike Lee get some attention too. He's finally nominated, and I'd love to see him. Long time overdue.
Okay,
I'm excited about the docs, of course. Thrilled to see Minding the Gap, which is a film that came here to Sundance.
Four out of the five from Sundance, Katie.
Yeah.
I think
RBG,
four out of the five.
Free Solo was not. but Free Solo is up there, which we also showed, which is just amazing. But just great storytelling and really diverse storytelling, which I think is really important.
Okay. Barbara?
The only one I'm really pulling for is Sam Elliott. I think he's long overdue for attention, if nothing else, just for his voice. Yeah. And he is the only celeb I've ever come close to stalking. I admit it.
Okay. And I vote for Sam Elliott, too, although I have not stalked him.
It's good to know we agree on that, Rick. Maybe we can go after him together sometime.
Yeah, even if it's just a sideways career Oscar, Sam Elliott, go Sam, go.
Yeah.
And thank you, our film panel. We'll be back soon for the Oscars. Jill Orshall, Katie Wen, and Barbara Bretz, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. And we really do love you.